In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for hour number two for Tuesday, May 25th, 2010 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In hour number one of our program, you heard, among others, from John Needham of the Government Accountability Office, talking about the transition from a contractor-based workforce to the insourcing effort that's being talked about in the Obama administration, leading to mostly federal employees or all federal employees. Mr. Needham will expand on the conversation that you heard in hour number one in the second half of this hour of In Depth with Francis Rose. We begin this hour, though, with a discussion about inspectors general. The Center for Public Integrity, in a piece called Where Are the Watchdogs, says that at least 15 of the 73 inspectors general, chief auditors, or whistleblower protection jobs across government currently are vacant or being covered by acting officials, according to a CPI review. Most of the openings have languished for a year or more. The State Department, for instance, has been without its chief watchdog since early 2008, when President George Bush's inspector general appointee resigned after a controversy involving investigations into spending in Iraq and Afghanistan, and it cites a number of others among those 15. A person who has held that job in the past, not at the State Department, but at the Department of Defense, is Eleanor Hill, former DOD Inspector General and recipient of the Defense Department Distinguished Service Medal and Bronze Palm for the Distinguished Public Service Medal. My guest on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, Ms. Hill, now a partner in the law firm of King and Spalding. And thank you very much for being on the program with me today.
Thank you, Francis. I'm glad to be here.
When you think about the idea that about, I'm going to do the quick math here, about one-fifth of the inspector general or equivalent positions across government are currently either vacant or being filled by acting, what's your thought about that initially?
Well, it's not good for government. I think the inspector general position is an important one. It's unique. It has an important role in oversight in our government agencies, which and departments, which I think is extremely important. So it's not a good thing that we are missing a number of appointed, we don't have a number of appointed IGs in place at this point. But I should add, it is not terribly unusual. I mean, we have had historically, over the years in a number of administrations, instances where we went for long periods of time without a confirmed presidentially appointed IG at a particular department or agency. I can tell you in my own experience, as you noted, I was the Inspector General at the Department of Defense for about 4 years. I can tell you that before I got there, I believe it was about 3.5 years, and this would have been in a time period that spanned part of the first Bush administration, George Herbert Walker Bush, and then later Bill Clinton's administration, for 3.5 years, during which spanned the both of those, there was no presidentially appointed confirmed IG at the Department of Defense. I then came in during the Clinton administration, was confirmed and served for 4 years, and I believe after I left, which was at the about the last year of the Clinton administration, it was another 3 years going into the George Walker Bush presidency before they appointed another permanent IG at the defense. So that's just one department, the biggest department in the U.S. government, and a couple of examples of where, for at least two different time periods, they were without a presidentially appointed confirmed IG for periods of over 3 years each.
What is this?
So it's not terribly unusual.
What is the status in the meantime? We have an acting official in place, I imagine, at the times that you talked about where there was not a presidentially appointed DOD inspector general.
Right.
Is that person able to do the same kinds of investigations, the same level to the same level of detail, and get the same level of cooperation that, for example, you would be able to as a presidentially appointed IG?
Right, that's a very good question. In our instance at Defense, it was the same individual. He was the Deputy Inspector General, and he served leading the office as the deputy and also as acting IG for a number of years. And he was someone who had been a career professional at the Department of Defense, was well respected, knew the organization well. So he was, I would say, very effective. But I would say that there is a difference between an acting IG and a presidentially appointed one. I think the presidentially appointed IGs who are confirmed by the Senate are secure in their position, have a lot more independence. They have a lot more clout, if you would, within that organization and within the department itself. And when it comes, certainly an acting IG has the authority and can run investigations, but when it comes to instances where the IG may be at odds with the department itself or may be dealing with Congress on an issue, I think there's no question that a permanent confirmed IG is a lot better equipped to deal with that because they just have more they have more independence. They are not a employee of the department, a career employee, as many of the acting IGs are.
Is it noteworthy that some of the lengths of time that some of these positions have been open are getting as long as they're getting? There are a number that President Obama, who's been in office for about a year and a half now, has not named nominees for. You mentioned in at each end of your transition at DOD that there was a several-year period. Is that typical, or is that something that we should start to think about, the people who are interested in this kind of thing?
Well, I think unfortunately it's gone back for a while. I mean, this has happened. The IGs, for whatever reason, are not the initial people that get named and appointed in a new incoming administration. I mean, they certainly are not, a new administration is not as focused on appointing an IG as they are on focusing on, for instance, appointing their cabinet to start with. So, I mean, there are other priorities. They do get to the IG positions, but I think part of it is just, it's not just a question of appointing IGs, it's the whole appointment process throughout government. I mean, I think in every administration you have stories of people in positions, people waiting on hold to be nominated and positions being open for a long period of time. It just takes a very long period of time, number one, to find the right people, to vet them, particularly in the environment nowadays where, you know, people, there are many, many stories in all kinds of positions of people being appointed or nominated where their background is scrubbed, thoroughly and then it's scrubbed by the press and there's some issue that comes up and they wait for months and months and months and eventually withdraw. So, I mean, it's a difficult process. We try to get the best people in government, but when you get to that visibility level, I think it's very hard. And it's hard to find people who are willing to go through that process and wait for as long as it takes, whether it's an IG position or another position.
You mentioned the visibility level of the position of Inspector General. I want to come back to that, but something that you said there kind of dovetails with another question I had, which is, does maybe the model of having Inspectors General as presidentially appointed, does that business model work well, or should maybe the consideration be made toward moving toward more career-type IGs so that there isn't this long transition process?
Well, I don't think, I am not a supporter of, when you say career type IGs, I assume you mean people that would be appointed by the department.
Yes.
And serve, which we have IGs like that in government. There are many of them that are opposed to, different from the presidentially appointed IGs at the major departments and agencies. I would say that to me, I'm a supporter of the presidential appointment process, and the reason is not because I'm a believer in giving the president more power on this. It's more that I think it gives the IG more independence. The problem with career IGs in agencies is they are appointed by the agencies, and they answer to those agencies, and it's very difficult at times for a career IG who is not appointed by a president and confirmed by the U.S. Senate to stand up and take issue with their agency on something when they're in fact working for that agency. And I will tell you that during my term as the IG at DOD, Of course, I had the independence of Senate confirmation presidential appointment. There were a number of IGs at defense agencies that I oversaw that were below me in rank and did not have that statutory independence. And there were many times when those IGs would call me and say, we have an issue here with our agency, we want to look at it, but I don't have the independence to look at it. I think you should look at it and use your people at the department's IG because you have the independence to do it. And we would do that. And so that's it's very clear to me that on the tough, tough issues where the department's view and the IG's view may be different, you need the independence of a statutorily presidential appointed Senate-confirmed IG to handle that.
Let's talk about the visibility level of inspectors general, the position, and the people filling that position. When we come back from a break, my guest is Eleanor Hill, a partner in the law firm of King and Spalding and former Defense Department Inspector General. My guest on In Depth on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in a moment.
There is a watchmaking standard that is revered around the world. That standard comes from Rolex. From clasp to bracelet to its unique watertight oyster case, a Rolex holds its value because it was intended to. Crafted from just three precious metals, platinum, steel, and gold, each defies the ordinary. Its steel, 904L, virtually indestructible and corrosion resistant, is incomparable. Its patented Everrose Gold, created in an exclusive foundry, will remain beautiful for life. Inside, a genuine Rolex movement is a product of superiority and remarkable testing. It is unrivaled. At Rolex, flawless standards create more than a watch. They create a value that was meant to endure. For a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store since 1900. Tourneau, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
A transformation is about to take place, the change to ICD-10. ICD-10 is the mandatory new diagnosis and procedure coding system that must be implemented by October 1st, 2013. However, ICD-10 is more than an IT effort. It's a regulation that has a large impact on policies, business operations, clinical processes, and healthcare outcomes research. Listen Wednesday, May 26th at 11 a.m. for a panel discussion entitled ICD-10, Risk or Opportunity, sponsored by Noblis. Find out why you need to act now in order to be ready for ICD-10 at noblis.org/ICD-10.
Do you need PDUs, CEUs, or CLPs? At ESI, you'll find continuing education opportunities to maintain your DAU, PMI, and NCMA certifications, plus ESI International's robust contract management, project management, and business analysis courses are backed by the George Washington University. Classes start early on weekends and are available anytime online. For more information or to register today, visit esifederal.com. Strengthen your career and build your resume. esifederal.com.
The Internet. It's indispensable. Without it, how else would we perform crucial functions like shoe shopping, watching videos of a cat playing the piano, emailing inspirational anecdotes to our 1,000 closest friends? But despite these awesome utilizations of information technology, at Kaiser Permanente, we've found some better uses. Like being able to securely manage your own health online 24/7, emailing your doctor's office, checking most test results, reviewing meds, making routine appointments. Not to mention a vital digital connection between you, your doctor, and everyone on your team. Could it be that making total health smarter, more efficient, and more convenient is the very sort of thing for which the Internet was intended? Maybe. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't fit in a cat video now and then. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we want you to live well, laugh well, and thrive. Learn more at kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for this afternoon's Dorabeck Insider. In the Gov 2.0 world, government employees need to engage online. That's one of the key recommendations from Australia's Gov 2.0 task force. We'll talk to the person who led that group and find out what Gov 2.0 is down under. And the Management of Change Conference finishes up today. What's the buzz? We'll talk to Federal News Radio's Jason Miller. All that and much more this afternoon, 3 to 7 on the Dorabeck Insider, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're talking about the state-of-the-art in Inspectors General Corps in the federal government. My guest is Eleanor Hill, a partner in the law firm King & Spalding and former Defense Department Inspector General from 1995 to 1999. Ms. Hill, I appreciate your time to talk about these issues. One of the things that we discussed in the last segment was the concept of the visibility of the Inspector General Corps. There are a number of instances where it's hard to find, for example, a web presence for offices of the Inspector General. Some of the work is not highly publicized outside of the agencies that the IGs work for. It's been my experience that some Inspectors General prefer not to do media interviews or talk much about the work and instead let the work stand for itself. Is that perception correct, do you think, that visibility is not a priority for IGs? And do you think that that's necessarily a good or a bad thing, since a lot of the work that the agencies, IGs do, can turn out to be high-profile stuff?
Well, a couple thoughts on that. I mean, I think I would say certainly publicity and working with the media is not their first priority, because most IGs really view themselves as professional investigators or auditors. I mean, their job is investigations, including criminal investigations. Most of them have law enforcement authority. They do have law enforcement authority. They do criminal investigations. And they also do a large number of audits. So they are very, and I think correctly, focused on staying professional and following the rules on investigations and audits. And particularly in the criminal area, as with any law enforcement agency, they are under some restrictions as to what they can say publicly about pending criminal investigations. So in that respect, part of that reticence or reluctance to deal with the media on pending investigations is appropriate. On the other hand, there are, I think, an increasing window for public view of what the IGs do and familiarity with the IG work. For example, just recently, within the last, 2008, the IG Act was reformed. And in that, the new IG Reform Act in 2008, Congress now requires that IG reports, once they are publicly released, be posted on the IG websites within 3 days of their public release. So if you go to all IGs should have websites, and under this new statute, they need to post those reports on those websites, if they are public reports, within 3 days. All the audit reports, or almost all the audit reports, are made public, with the exception, obviously, of classified information. Criminal cases, they do normally issue press releases once the case is concluded, but certainly not while they are conducting the criminal investigation. The other thing I would point out, which is a huge source of public scrutiny of IG work, is the Congress. Congress really created the IGs as a way of supplementing oversight ability in the agencies and giving the Congress a window into that oversight. And the IGs are required to report to Congress on what they do. And many of the congressional committees routinely rely on IG reports, IG testimony in hearings to spotlight problem areas and potential areas for needed work in the agencies. So I think you will find more and more public visibility of IG work through congressional hearings. For example, the special IGs for Iraq reconstruction and for Afghanistan reconstruction efforts have both gotten a considerable amount of attention from Congress. They've testified on their reports and their efforts, and so I think there's more and more visibility in that respect for IGs, which is appropriate.
One of the things that we talked about before was the idea that, like other positions in the federal government, it's hard to get IG nominees vetted and confirmed. Another area that the IG community seems to be a microcosm of the broader federal community is the fact that we need a new generation of them. There will be more work to be done. where is the next generation of IGs going to come from? What makes somebody qualified to start maybe lower in an IG office that leads them up to the path that you took to the head of the IG office at DOD?
Right. Well, you know, the IG Act is very specific on what they need to look for. I mean, you can only be nominated to be an IG if you have demonstrated ability in at least some of a listed specific areas that Congress has included in the statute, and that includes accounting, auditing, financial analysis, law, management analysis, public administration, and investigation. So when the White House looks for IG candidates, they tend to look for people who have investigative or audit background. You see many former law enforcement individuals. There are several IGs that came out of the Secret Service, for example. You see some former prosecutors. I was a former prosecutor. There have been others. You see former auditors, people who have worked at the Government Accountability Office, GAO, people who have done oversight of government or done investigations are familiar with those kinds of things. And I think that's good because the big two focuses of these offices are audits and investigations. And it helps if the person who is leading that office has practical experience in those areas. So in terms of future IGs, I would think they're going to continue to look to the people coming out of law enforcement agencies, out of auditing agencies, oversight mentality, those types of things. And the good news is there are a lot of people out there like that. You know, we have a tremendous law enforcement community in the federal government, a tremendous auditing community, not only in the IG shops, but in the other audit agencies and in the Government Accountability Office. So there are candidates out there. It's just finding them and finding people who are willing to leave whatever else it is they are doing to take on the duties of the IG, which, you know, is not an easy job. It is a challenging job.
Eleanor Hill is a partner in the law firm of King & Spalding and the former Inspector General at the Department of Defense. And as such, your insight and experience very valuable to us today. And I appreciate your time very, very much. Thank you for being on the program.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.